Hello and welcome to the latest in our series of BRC Trade Podcasts. I'm William Madison. In this edition, how are we trading differently from 4 years ago and where are the plethora of UK trade negotiations taking us? What's the latest on the protocol with the meeting of the Joint Committee ahead, going ahead next week? And it's au revoir, sayonara, goodbye next week for Mr. Bain. What are his highlights the last 4 years at the BRC? I'm joined here for the last time by William Bain, our trade expert, and by Aidan Connolly, director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. How's it going, William? How does it feel to be on the final ever podcast?
I hope not the final ever podcast. I think we should all keep podcasting and be guests on each other's. I think that'll work. We'll share the knowledge.
Yes, I should assure the listeners, I'm sure there'll be more BRC podcasts to come, just in slightly different forms. Aidan, how are you feeling? How was it? How was the sort of the couple of last weeks of mourning been for you?
Not speaking to William, he's leaving me and I'm just not happy. No, I'm going to miss him. I will finish this today's podcast with a rounding rendition of New York, New York, while I open a bottle of bourbon whiskey and toast William's good health and new endeavors.
Unlike Donald Trump, I don't have a plane on the runway and it's not going to play my way. So listeners can be reassured about that.
Oh, geez. Okay, so kicking things off for today, Aidan, expectations are not high for next week's joint committee meeting, finding a comprehensive solution to all of the issues affecting retailers on GB to NI goods movements. What's the latest in the state of play and what are you and businesses doing to give the process a bit of a nudge?
That's a wonderfully complex question. You'd almost think that William wrote that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Actually, this week I had a meeting with Lord Frost, so I got to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. And basically what we were telling them is the same thing we told the Irish government last week when we met with the Foreign Minister, Simon Coveney, and what we've been saying to the EU. And that is, it's absolutely wonderful that we are getting all of this engagement and the talking must continue. But really, what we need now are deliverables. We need some quick wins and some of them need to be symbolic wins. To remove the tension and de-dramatize some of the situation in Northern Ireland, because really, at the time of recording, we are heading towards a very long, hot, arduous and fractious summer. And it's a real concern, not just for the business community, but for communities across Northern Ireland. We've seen unionism and loyalism are not very happy with the protocol in all its parts. And that is, you know, ramping up the tensions. What we told Lord Frost was that, quite simply, there are still problems. But the protocol is better than the alternative, which would have been a chaotic, destructive no deal. We still need those mitigations. We still need those 4 points. The stability that comes from an extension of the grace period. We have got that, but we need the EU to acquiesce. We need the certainty of the long-term solution that delivers for business that is done with business rather than to business. The most important thing is we still need the simplicity. And we talked about the veterinary agreement and we actually talked about something that William and I have been pushing for a while, which is a veterinary agreement with a guillotine clause or a guillotine clause. And what that means is that we would have dynamic alignment with the EU up until something triggered the guillotine clause and then the veterinary agreement, the SPS agreement, will come to an end. What that means is that we could continue as before. Remember, our veterinary agreement will remove about 85% of checks and it will also remove some of the paperwork as well, a lot of the paperwork as well. So it keeps goods flowing, but it means that when the UK does their wonderful deals with India or Australia or the big prize, which is the USA, that they will be able to quickly move to that sort of new SPS regime because of the Guillotine Clause, which will stop the SPS final agreement with the EU. What that does is it buys us time as businesses. It buys the UK, by removing friction, of course, it buys the UK and the EU time to get a trusted trader scheme across the line. That will be all weather. It doesn't matter what the SPS requirements of any of the new trade deals will be. We will be protected, GB to NI, because there will be a robust trusted trader scheme, an audited and certified supply chain, if you will. I really need to get that on a t-shirt because I'm saying it so often. And that's where we want to get to. And that's what businesses is asking for, not just ourselves, but people like food processors, farmers, and a wide across business. You've got to remember, 70% of the value of all goods across GB10I are for retailer shelves. And if you remove that 70% from checks and from paperwork, the majority of the paperwork, it frees up the ports. It allows other things to move a lot more smoothly as well. So what Lord Frost was telling us is that the protocol is a delicately balanced text, and that he's hearing that there are still problems on both sides. He'd love to have an SPS agreement, is what he told us. But you know, it all depends. One man's SPS agreement is another man's monstrosity, and it all depends on that thing called alignment, whether or not there's dynamic alignment, whether or not there's an equivalence agreement. And this is where we come into sort of both ideology and reality. The UK, whenever Brexit happened, they got this huge big bag of sovereignty back. It's now how they're going to give it out, how they're going to use that. He was also saying that, you know, what he's heard from Northern Ireland business is that there's a mix of the protocol working and not working. There's still fundamental problems, that there's an education piece needed for GB businesses supplying NI, also for EU businesses supplying NI or getting NI goods, and that there needs to be solutions found. Now, he did say that there will be a lot of strong negotiations at the joint committee meeting, which will be somewhere around the 9th. So less than a week away, then we should hear some more. But to be honest, I don't think with the talks and with the general atmosphere and what's been said in the press by the EU and by the UK, you know, the tensions are ramping up. Instead of what we need is a way of deflating some of that pressure that's on not just Northern Ireland, but the general relationship between the EU and the UK. What we're doing, well, we in the BRC, NIRC, we're putting together some more principles on a trusted trader scheme, an auditable and certified supply chain, if you will. And we're going to be sharing that with both the EU and the UK government. We need to get that moving. We really will continue to push. You've got to remember, the clock is ticking, and October the 1st is the start of the phase-in of those new checks, those EHCs, export health certificates. All costly, because it's friction, and when there's friction, there's cost. And I've said many times before, the people in Northern Ireland, half the discretionary income of Great British households, quite simply cannot afford to have those extra costs. The other thing that we're working on at the moment, I'm also the convener of the Northern Ireland Business Brexit Working Group, which takes into account about 85% of all business in Northern Ireland. When we're talking about the Brexit issue. I'm not like the Pope, not when I'm talking as far as the NIBBWG, I'm not infallible, but it's a good sort of bellwether of where business is. So what we're working on is a paper, and it's turned into the quite the tome of where the problems are. But the big difference is, about a year ago, and for several years, the Northern Ireland business community didn't want to put forward solutions. We wanted to point out the problems. We wanted to work with government and with the EU to try and find solutions. Now we're putting forward solutions. And the reason why is because we are in a different state of affairs. The TCA is there. It didn't have SPS. The protocol's there. There are still problems with that. And if we're going to get the opportunities of access of both markets that the protocol gives, then we need to get some solutions very, very quickly. And that paper will put forward a lot of those solutions. Hopefully get that launched before the joint committee, and it'll be sent to the EU and UKG. And that's what business is continuing to do. We're continuing to hold down the fort. We're continuing to work hard to overcome the challenges, as we have done from the 1st of January. It all goes back to the EU and the UK. We need them to put some solutions on the table. We need some very quick deliverables to de-dramatise the situation in Northern Ireland. But most of all, we need them both to live up to their commitments in the protocol, in the preamble to the protocol, where it said that this would all be done to the least disruption to Northern Ireland communities. So we will just keep plugging away. It's literally all we can do.
A lot to think about there. So is it likely that the food and SPS regulation elements are the most difficult and therefore likely to be the last resolved by the October expiry of many of the easements? And in areas like medicine, do you think that's going to be a bit easier to resolve?
I think we're going to see some movement on medicines. A little bird in the EU, and a little bird from UKG confirmed it, that they are on some areas of medicines. You got to remember that medicines aren't one single block. There are lots of different things that affect medicines. You've got over-the-counter medicines, you've got general sale medicines, GSL medicines. You've also got those ones that need to be signed off by both the MRHA and the EMA for use in Northern Ireland. So it's a little bit more complicated than just saying medicines are fixed. But we do know that there is going to be some movement at the Joint Committee on medicines. Will it be enough? We don't know because, you know, it's medicines, medical devices. As I said, it's very, very complicated. On the SPS stuff, to be honest, it should have been the first thing that was sorted. And I don't mean that just because a lot of our members are either fast food or grocery. I mean because it is such a hugely emotive issue. One, about people's tables, whether they have the affordability and the availability that they need. But secondly, it's hugely symbolic of whether or not people can get their British sausages or their Stilton cheese. And for some people, it's food is actually an identity issue. And I don't think that a lot of people, either in GB or around the world, sort of get that and how important it is to some people in Northern Ireland. So I think we're sitting now at the start of June. It takes a long time to get a workable trading solution. I have severe doubts whether or not we can, you know, pat each other in the back on the 1st of October and look, stand back like at the new owners of a new car, looking at a new shiny SPS solution that's just been agreed by the EU and the UK. Even if it is done just at the end of September, you got to remember one thing we don't need, or that we need like a hole in the head, as my father would say, is another 11th hour decision. Business is not a light switch. You cannot turn it on and off. They need time to get ready. And some of these big changes that we had in December should have been phased in over a year, 18 months. We didn't have that grace period. What we have was a protracted negotiation period. We do need the solution. Time is ticking, but we also need time to implement it. So for us, you know, that veterinary agreement would remove a lot of those problems and give breathing space to business, but also breathing space to both the UK government and the EU to find a workable, long-term, trusted trader solution that is both pragmatic and proportionate.
And do you have any update on how business is likely to be engaged with by both sides as the process continues to that point? How likely are we to get an extension of the current easements on food if a durable end state on compliance eludes us?
So we will continue to get a lot of attention from UKG. One of the things that the community that William has run, the trade community, is particularly good at is providing opportunities to meet with DIT, with Bayes and with others, and we'll continue to do that. I think that, you know, the fact that we have that continued engagement, you know, and HMRC is in the mix there as well, is a good show of how serious of an issue this is. And that in the officials, at least, they understand that this is an existential issue for some retailers and for a lot of product lines. But the one thing that hasn't happened yet was when we first met Vice President Šefčovič and Michael Gove in February of this year, they promised that it was our idea. We asked for it, actually. We asked for a business consultative group that would sit with the Joint Committee heads and the Specialised Committee heads. Now, we have had a meeting with the Specialised Committee heads, but it isn't a formalised, agended, deep dive business consultative group. And that's what we'll continue to ask for. Again, there's an awful lot of talking that is going on. Sometimes not the right type of talking, because we need that consultative group. But what we really need, what we really, really need, are some solutions delivered, not just to remove tension in Northern Ireland, but the business community in Great Britain and the business community, especially in Northern Ireland, need to feel and need to be shown that their faith and hard work in this process has been warranted.
William, turning to you now, while we've been focused on trade issues specifically for retailers over the last 4 years, a different pattern of UK trade has been emerging. How is it different than before the EU referendum?
Absolutely. So this was the set of data that was published by the ONS, the Office for National Statistics, off the basis of DIT returns. And what it paints is a really stark picture of how differently things have gone. And of course, I think there was a degree of surprise, perhaps on both sides of the new customs border between GB and the EU, that there wasn't more disruption. You know, those reasonable worst case scenarios that we saw last year didn't come to fruition. But why has that been? It's been because we're doing a lot less trade with the EU than was the case before. So between the first quarter of 2018, the first quarter of 2021, there's been a 23% reduction in trade between the UK and the EU, which is really stark. You know, that's over a fifth, approaching a quarter. And so it shows that, you know, progressively over that period, the main adjustment was that either people have been trading smaller volumes or that some companies have given up trading with the EU altogether. And that is going to, I think, recraft, you know, the levels of trade. You know, we were used to in the years of the Blair government having around half of UK trade with the EU. I mean, that is likely to fall quite a bit, given that big adjustment that's happened in the last 3 years. And the other aspect that really flies out of the figures is the vast increase in the amount of imports from China that have come in the last 3 years as well. So we're now importing two-thirds more goods from China than we were in 2018. Now, part of that's down to, you know, the desire for the latest consumer electrical and electronic items. But of course, a great deal of UK clothing comes from China as well. And that does, I think, raise some profound questions, because on the one hand, the UK government and businesses perhaps see the case for deeper trade relations with China. But on the other hand, you've got what's going on in Xinjiang. So how you put those two things together is, I think, going to be a test for many industries, many sectors, and the UK government over the next few years. But I think the reality is that welcome though many of these new trade negotiations are, they are not making up for what is a huge lump out of UK trade, which has happened over the last 3 years in the run-up to the end of the transition period and just after the transition period itself. So it does raise profound questions about what things we're going to trade in the future, how we're going to make our money as a country, and how business is going to position itself.
So there's been lots of activity from the Department of Trade on trade negotiations, including the next-gen countries the UK has been focusing on. Are we any closer to finding out where the UK trade priorities will be in the future? And what is it that the UK is planning to do with this newfound regulatory freedom?
So one of the last things that I've been doing is to put together, in a sense, a timeline of all these negotiations. And there is a huge amount of activity that DIT is doing. I mean, we had all of the endeavours to get the rollover agreements in place before the end of the transition period. Most of them were. But we're also now seeing an intent to try and make some of these agreements more bespoke. So the agreements with Mexico and Canada, for example, were, you know, basic rollovers of the agreements with the EU. The UK would, I think, want to see something more in terms of digital trade, which is one of its key policy priorities. Perhaps seeing some provisions on gender, on climate change, on small businesses. So these are the so-called next-gen trade agreements that are going on. But of course, in terms of Mexico, you know, the EU has you know, recently been in discussions about a next-gen deal with Mexico in any case. So the issue about constantly improving your trade agreements is not something that is unique to the UK. I think it's interesting that there is a sense that things in Washington are, well, certainly until the last day or so, perhaps momentum on the UK-US free trade agreement negotiations had stalled. But of course, President Biden is due to meet the Queen as well as the Prime Minister over the course of the G7 summit at the end of next week. And there are some efforts that we'll come on to about some of the other disputes that the UK's had with the US. So I think the sense is that whilst momentum has dripped away in terms of those discussions, they are still on the agenda, but there would be a race against time really to get things done prior to the midterm elections next November. So it seems to me still odds are that a UK-US full free trade agreement would not be ready before that period. And then, you know, you're in the run-up to the next presidential election. So very little gets through what could be a divided Congress by that point. And of course, there's a whole slew of other trade negotiations the UK is involved with. Just yesterday, getting the green light from the 11 current members to proceed with CPTPP accession, looking at perhaps next year beginning, later this year beginning a trade negotiation process with India that might yield different outputs, not just a final trade agreement, but also perhaps some tariff reductions before that point. And you've got an interest from the UK in a deal with the Gulf Cooperation Council as well, that could be very, very interesting in terms of foreign direct investment and what it says on all of that. So I think we're seeing a lot of activity. The integrated review, which the UK government published a couple months back, is meant to give an overall framework. Insofar as I think we can work something out, it seems to be, yes, export-led growth of manufactured goods is an area that they want to emphasise. So there are opportunities for retailers there, particularly expanding e-commerce offers to customers in the rest of the world. Depending on the country, then issues like green growth are a priority. So they are with New Zealand, but they may not be with some other countries. Clearly, there is an effort to try and get more labour mobility, given that free movement with the EU has been lost, to get more labour mobility with some rest of the world countries. We're already seeing areas where there are sectoral deficiencies in terms of employment being available in the UK. And I think also the other elephant in the room that we've mentioned already, so perhaps you know, for us it's not an elephant in the room, is what happens on China. Now, the integrated review says the UK wants to have closer trade links with China. Well, does that mean having a trade agreement? Does it mean doing some things at the WTO? What does that mean? You know, so I think longer term, that relationship with China, I think, could be the story of the next 10 to 20 years if these trends in trade data that we've talked about continue over that next decade. Just that final issue in terms of regulatory freedom. So what we do hear a lot from in terms of people from Whitehall is that they want a more common law based approach to regulation. They think the EU regulations are too prescriptive. They want them to be more common sense, more risk based as they see it. But then you ask for examples about where exactly and which regulations they're going to make changes from. And of course, the answers are not quite so forthcoming. And you have a complex picture, both with the protocol in Northern Ireland and governments in Wales and Scotland potentially wanting to align voluntarily with EU regulation and EU guidance. And it will make a very complex picture for retailers and others to have to navigate.
There's also been some developments this week on the proposed US tariffs on the UK and other European goods. What's happening with this?
Yeah, so yesterday the US Trade Representative said that as a result of the consultation that they had done, which ended on May the 11th, they were now going to recommend tariffs on UK consumer goods. Some other countries caught up with this as well, like Austria and Turkey. This is all about the UK digital services tax, which has been put through and the US feels is unfair on companies like Google and Amazon. Now, what happened is that, yes, USTR recommended that the tariffs would go ahead, but immediately suspended them for 180 days until the 29th of November. And that's to give this process both at the G20 level and at OECD level to try and make some global rules that would underpin both corporate taxes and digital services taxes bear fruit. July is going to be a big month at the OECD, but even if it takes a bit longer to get a deal, and the Biden administration is keen to get a deal, it gives that opportunity to get a resolution of this by the end of the autumn. But if there isn't, then if the UK keeps its digital services tax on the statute book, then there could still be tariffs on things like cashmere, a whole range of consumer exports from the UK to the US of 25% at the end of November. So watch this space over the summer.
And finally, William, you are leaving us next week. So how do you feel? And maybe give us a summary of some of the highlights of the last 4 years working at the BRC.
Well, I'm enormously grateful for the opportunity that I've had to work with companies big and small. I look to be taking that up in my next role even more. Working with a great team of people, And also finding a niche. You know, one of the things when, you know, one's life tends to go in 4 or 5 year cycles. If you look back at different things that I've done, is that being able to put all of the pieces of the jigsaw together and to sort of find a niche that will provide some stability for the next couple of decades is a very good thing. I think when I joined the BRC, you know, obviously when, you know, one's career in politics ends, can often be very difficult for people to find that niche. So I spent a period in consultancy, as you know, and I was probably a bird flying with one wing and a damaged wing by the time that I joined. And these 4 years on, I sort of depart flying away very happily in both wings and having learnt a lot in that period. I think some of the sort of classic moments were, you know, when we were in Dublin and, you know, the protocol, the very first version of the protocol was published. And there was a snowstorm in Dublin, and we had to stay in our hotel rooms. And it gave a perfect opportunity to read that first iteration of the protocol. And I do remember saying, oh my goodness, the UK government is not going to like this. And of course, that was the start of where everything panned out from the protocol. I think also, you know, having to advise companies around the sort of different alphabeti spaghetti options, you know, what is a customs union, what is a Canada agreement, how does it differ from a Ukraine agreement, and the enormous interest and diligence that companies took in getting through all of this was enormously helpful. Now we're obviously much more into a compliance phase, so it's about making sure the processes are in place. But no, a lovely 4 years, and really grateful for the opportunity. I will miss the characters. I will miss the regular trade community calls. But I'm sure our paths will cross quite soon again in the future.
Excellent. And I think... Oh.
Oh. Oh.
I just thought I'd play out with the theme music at the end of The Incredible Hulk. It's just I'm just a bit emotional right now. Ah, mate, I'm gonna miss you. I'm gonna miss you. Who's gonna be my straight guy now? It just won't be as funny. Enough of that emotion.
As long as you don't, well, indeed, Aidan, the extraordinary thing about you and your journey is that you know, you're not having the issues with shirts which the Incredible Hulk had with his.
not yet. It's going the opposite direction.
Keep going.
All right.
I'm gonna miss you, mate. I'm gonna miss you.
I'll miss you all. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to bring things to a close now, guys, before it gets too gushy. Best of luck, William, with your new role in trade at the British Chambers of Commerce. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot from you there, and don't be a stranger. So from Aidan and myself and everyone at the BRC, it's goodbye for now.